sorry. I'm a lovely lady. It makes me a lovely, very lovely girl. All I do that is I'm gold. My name is Oliver.
Hey there.
Yeah. Kuah. How did you... Steve? Steve? Say, aren't you that crazy killer who cuts out people's eyes? Ew, what the heck? Gross.
Last season, your manservant Steve bumped me on the head so hard that I forgot who I was. I forgot how to... kill.
A common side effect of the kidnapping process.
I need you to do it again.
What?
Look at me, the deadliest serial killer the whole world has ever seen, with a bot that just won't quit. You'd think I'd have it all, right? The truth of the matter is, well, I'm bored. Each life I harvest starts to look the same. Each eye no longer the window to the soul, instead just a pile of useless jelly. See?
Why did you bring all these eyes to my lair? Who's going to clean this up?
I was murdering a grandma on Colfax when I got to thinking, what if I could start over fresh? Experience that first kill again, then the second, then the 500th. What a gift that would be. Please, Mr. Serpent, I've been trying to give myself head trauma, but it just ain't the same. Your ghoul bop good. Could he bop me one last time? Only this time harder than he's ever bopped?
They say that to be an evil genius best-selling horror writer still waiting for a big break, you have to have a heart of ice. But that doesn't mean I don't have feelings. And something about your predicament has stirred up my feelings like a freshly shaken box of hornets.
You mean you'll do it?
Quid pro quo, Miss Deranged Murderer. I just happened to finish a new story. In order to get the bop of your life, you've got to read me the story. And you gotta do it good. Deal?
Deal.
Okay, let me go get my evil chair. One second, it's kind of far away. This is a story about the power of podcasts and how they can reach even the strangest of creatures.
Ashburn. The all-black Range Rover rolled to a wealthy stop in front of an elephant-sized peanut. It wasn't a real peanut, merely a statue of a peanut expanded to gargantuan proportions. If it had been real, it would have been a miracle. A peanut this size could feed a family of nutaholics for a moon's age or more. A sign below the peanut read, "Welcome to Ashburn, Georgia, home of the Peanut Festival and the Fire Ant Festival." The Range Rover's windows were so tinted that it would take the eyes of an eagle to pierce their smoky darkness. Within the vehicle, in the driver's seat no less, sat a man. His black leather duster, black sunglasses, and long black hair told you everything you needed to know about him. Artist. Genius. Badass. Something was playing on the radio. The man pressed the volume button on his console, causing the dulcet sounds of a horror story to rise. A podcast. The reader was really getting into it, his voice as silky as smooth chocolate.
The disposal's opening appeared like a gaping maw before her, a sight that sent dreadful chills surging up and down her spine like a column of army ants on the march. Could she do it? Could she really reach her hand into the circular darkness and fish out her wedding ring? She had to. Her wife. If she saw her without her ring, she'd take it as a sign of unfaithfulness, and the calendar year of their relationship would turn the page to divorce season. But the disposal had been on the fritz. Dare she risk it? Hesitation wasn't her strong suit. She shoved her hand into the disposal and screamed, for at that moment, it came to life with a whir and gore volcano from the dark hole until Jessica died horribly. Thank you for listening. I'm Scott Splinter, and this is the Splinterverse.
The Range Rover driver opened the Splinterverse's homepage on his name-brand cellular device. Hundreds of original horror stories ready for download at any time. His own face, dour and intense, greeted him at the top of the screen. He was Scott Splinter. He navigated to his podcast statistics. thousands of downloads from all over the world and its nations. The Splinterverse truly was a global phenomenon. But one area on this wretched planet we call Earth was a hotspot of unusual fan ferocity. Tens of thousands of followers, hundreds of thousands of listens. Ashburn, Georgia. A letter shone delightfully from Scott's passenger seat. He picked it up and scanned the last sentence for the dozenth time. Hope to see you at our beloved Fire Ant Festival. Sincerely, your biggest fan in a down hometown of your biggest fans, Flossie May Queen. Flossie had attached a photo of herself, an official city government portrait that somehow accentuated her dramatic curves, supple frame, and beguiling face. Scott was already in love with her, or maybe the idea of her. He was a writer, the second greatest horror writer to ever live. As such, it was a simple effort for his genius mind to construct the perfect personality to go with his beauty from Ashburn, Georgia. A knock on his tinted window shook him from his reverie. A shape stood outside his car, staring in. Something about this figure was off, odd, as if the edges of the person looming on the other side of that metal and plastic and glass was somehow squiggly. He lowered the window to reveal a middle-aged woman in a visor and a Fire Ant Festival 98 t-shirt leering at him. Hello? Scott asked, the deep and melodious tones of his sonorous voice leaving no doubt that this man hosted a podcast. Hey there, the woman exclaimed, extending her hand, which Scott took. He had to fight not to let go in shocked disgust. There was something beneath her skin, something lumpy. It reminded him of a stress ball filled with sand. The woman gave him a quizzical look. Everything all right? Scott glanced at the hand sanitizer in his center console and fought the urge to use it. No, yes, everything's fine. Are you my concierge? That's right, honey. Jezebella Valentine, Ashburn's one and only official tour guide, the woman said. And might I just say, that voice. No wonder you're a podcaster extraordinaire. Scott smiled depressedly. A pleasure. Is Flossie with you? The woman cocked her head. Who? Flossie May Queen, Scott said. She invited me to your festival. The woman's confusion shifted to concern. Scott, she said, there's no one named Flossie in Ashburn. Scott recoiled as if struck by a swinging penis. Jezebella handed Scott a coffee and sat across her desk from him. Flossie's photograph lay stunningly between them. Jezebella glanced at it as if it were a rabid weasel. The office was small, the cheap, stained walls decorated with lackluster attempts to lure tourists to the South Georgia town. Come for the peanuts, stay for the fire ants. What can I say, Mr. Splendor? Jezebella said. The letter and photograph look authentic. I can see why you were bamboozled as you were. Scott picked at his chair's left armrest. She says she's the head of community outreach, Scott Splinter pressed. Surely she would work with your office. Surely you've seen her. Jezebella shook her head. I can assure you there is no one of that name in this town, and no one who matches the description implied by the picture. We're a small southern town, Mr. Splinter. Not a model in agency. Scott narrowed his eyes. He was already tired of this place and found the incongruities a bit disturbing. So who invited me here? He asked. Who told you to come meet me? Jezebella grinned at him. Scott thought he saw one of her teeth wiggle just a bit as her lips parted. The mayor, of course, she purred. Okay then, Scott said. Now we're getting somewhere. Which way is City Hall? Jezebella pointed out the door. That way, she said. I can take you if you like. Her voice trailed off. He was already gone. The Ashburn City Hall was a two-story brick, metal, and glass structure that looked like it used to be a public library or elementary school once upon a time. Large chrome letters on the tower-like brick portion announced it as City Hall, making it hard to miss. No one was on the street as Scott approached. Even more strangely, There wasn't a single car parked on Main Street. The whole place was empty. The whole place was dead. This would be a good spot for one of my Splinterverse horror stories, Scott mused aloud. He was a loner, a horror-writing rebel. Talking to himself came naturally. After all, he was his own biggest fan. A scuff of shoes on a concrete sidewalk caught Scott's attention and forced his head to turn in a leftward orientation, where he saw the figure of a woman watching him from down the street. It was impossible to tell who this woman was, but it was easy to tell that she was watching Scott with an eerie stillness. Hello? Flossie? He called out. The woman didn't move. Scott took out Flossie's picture and studied it. No. It wasn't her. The curves were wrong. All wrong. His ears once again detected the sound of shoe on sidewalk, transmitting the stimulus via electrochemical connectors to the nerve centers of his human brain. He looked up. The woman was gone. The street was empty again. Scott waited for a nod and then, with a shrug, turned back to his objective. He entered City Hall, where he was surprised to find a receptionist working behind a 1970s-era desk. It even had an ashtray on it. The receptionist looked up, his slicked back hair making him seem more like an undertaker's assistant. He smiled, his skin creasing, causing a lumpy bulge to appear beneath his eye. For a moment, Scott thought he saw the lump squirm. The receptionist blinked, and it was gone. Welcome to Ashburn, Mr. Splinter, the receptionist said. Scott looked at him like a quizzical gull. Do I know you? No, but we know you, the man said, his smile turning wistful. Everyone in Ashburn does. The Splinterverse, we're big fans. That voice, the strange man shuddered in ecstasy. I got a letter from this woman inviting me to your town, Scott said without preamble, exhibiting Flossie's stunning photo to the receptionist's eyes. For the Fire Ant Festival, the receptionist purred. He licked his lips, wetting his stratified squamous epithelium in a most unusual manner. Scott felt bile rising in his throat. Is she here? He asked. Flossie? The man took the picture from Scott and looked it over, even going so far as to turn it upside down. Who is this? The receptionist asked, sniffing the photograph. Flossie, Scott said. The woman who lured me here. Never heard of no Flossie, the man replied. He put the picture in his mouth and tasted it. Nope, not familiar at all. Scott looked away from the man's bizarre behavior and spotted a hallway. Eating paper was one thing, but defiling the only photo Scott had of his dream girl, it was beyond words. He let his eyes focus on the endless hall of doors and offices with occupants' names stenciled on the glass. Scott's gaze caught something near the hallway's end, a flicker of familiar letters. The receptionist looked up from the picture he was consuming. Hey, he said, setting it down. Hey, you can't go back there. Scott paid him no heed. He ran down the hallway like a bat on an updraft, soaring past door after door until he finally came to what he spotted mere moments ago. Flossie Mayqueen's office. Her beautiful name was stenciled on the last door in the hall. A stern shout came from down the hall. You can't be back there. Scott ignored it, instead opting to throw open the door, where he found an empty office, a barren room, with no Flossie, nor any human at all. Scott stalked out of the office where the receptionist was waiting for him. The odd man wrung his hands as if he'd just messed something up and was soon to catch an earful from his supervisor. How do you explain that? Scott asked, accusation dripping from his craw like a serpent's venom. Flossie's name on the door. The receptionist stuttered, his posture sagged. You weren't supposed to go back there. Scott tried to stay cool, but his left foot did a little petulant stomp of its own accord. Why not? He asked. Why does everyone act like Flossie doesn't exist? The receptionist couldn't meet his gaze. Because she's dead. The graveyard was on a gentle slope, the graves themselves not unlike gray pimples on the ass of some giant anteater. Viridian grass gave way to red Georgia clay around the gravestones, like wounds in the earth that never fully healed. Scott stood before a fresh grave, his posture matching his mental state, defeated. These words were etched on the stone. Here lies Flossie Mayqueen, beloved daughter and public servant.
What happened, Flossie? Scott asked.
He placed his hand on the stone.
What happened to you?
The earth was still fresh over the grave. A shovel leaned against its left side. Clearly, it was recently dug. A stinging sensation ran up Scott's leg. At first, he thought it was a writer's intuition, the most magical of feelings, but the pain got worse. He shouted in pain as he stumbled backwards. Then he pulled up his expensive trousers. Hundreds of little pinpricks coursing fire into his skin. His rolled-up jeans revealed them. Ants. Thousands of little red devils swarming over his right lower leg, latching onto the skin with their filthy mandibles, injecting their poison into his epidermis, inflicting a spillage of the most crimson of liquids, that being blood, onto his precious socks. Scott shrieked and swatted them off as fast as he could. He fell down from the effort, giving himself an eye-level view of the grave dirt and the millions of ants swarming out of it. Scott backpedaled, worried that these ants might strip him down to the bone given a chance. Did ants eat human flesh? Living flesh? What about dead flesh? Would they devour a dead corpse? The answer, he figured, was probably. Another thought crossed his mind. Why had Flossie died so suddenly? Did she know something about this odd town? Had she invited Scott here to help her expose the secret? Help her escape? His writer's brain, that magnificent engine of fiction fabrication, spooled into overdrive. Was Flossie buried with the evidence? He grabbed the shovel leaning on the grave and got to digging. The ants stung and bit his exposed flesh all the more, but his mind, steeled as it was with a mighty purpose, numbed the pain to merely a playful tot's pinch. Deeper and deeper he dug, his writerly arms wanting to give out for more physical exertion than he'd encountered his entire life, but he dared not stop. He had to know. Had this ravishing woman, this Flossie Mayqueen, been harboring a deadly secret? Finally, spades struck wood, and Scott kneeled, swiping away grave dirt until he revealed a polished mahogany box. A coffin. Scott hefted the shovel like a sledgehammer and beat the wood to pulp, smashing through the top of the coffin and revealing nothing. The coffin was empty. Flossie wasn't inside. The sun was setting now. And Scott stared at the ravaged coffin in the fading light, his mind attempting to process what just happened. He'd gone from yearning to mourning to confusion so fast. His hippocampus was reeling like an out-of-control top. Something moved inside the coffin, jolting Scott from his thoughts. He leaned in closer, trying to get a better look. Ants. What he took for the scarlet interior of the coffin wasn't the interior at all. It was a living, breathing lining of fire ants. A snap drew his attention. Scott looked up, where a shadow most devious slid away from the grave's edge. Clearly, someone or something had been watching him dig.
Hey!
He shouted, crawling out of the grave as fast as he could, rising above the earth in just enough time to see a figure vanishing into the woods.
Stop!
He said, giving chase. His legs felt like split infinitives, useless and grammatically incorrect, but he kept pace with the figure before him, praying that the coming shadow of night wouldn't cause him to trip over a log or fall into some pit. He shuddered as he thought about what wicked insects might be lurking in both types of cavities. A light glowed up ahead in the direction that this mysterious stranger was running. Scott doubled his pace and burst into a clearing where a harrowing sight awaited him. Hundreds of people stood before a giant hill, hands clasped in prayer, eyes closed. Scott saw some people he recognized. The receptionist? Jezebella? Some others he'd seen in reviews on Ashburn's official name brand search engine listing. And there, standing before all of them, was the mayor. And Flossie? Scott asked in disbelief. It was indeed her, as radiant as the sun over a water park. She was identical to the visage in her photo. She smiled, a hint of sadness dotting her lips. "What's going on? Why are all of you out here?" Scott asked. The mayor patted Flossie on the shoulder. "Show him, Flossie." Flossie's mouth opened wide and her head slowly tilted backward, settling upon an angle only a pelican or some other freak of nature could achieve. A chitinous, scuttling sound emerged from her throat, followed closely by fire ants. Thousands of them. They poured from her mouth like water from a leaky commode, cascading over her fair summer dress and spilling onto the grassy ground. Worse still, the woman seemed to deflate while this happened, like ants were her only insides, and without them, she had no form. Scott squirted out of his mouth. He looked down at the pile of skin, which, up till a moment ago, had been Flossie Mayqueen, the woman of his dreams, now just a flat sack of useless flesh. "Come on, son," the mayor said, putting a hand on Scott's shoulder and leaning him forward. "Step into the light there, boy. We've been waiting for you. Big old podcast producer come down here to Ashburn, and just in time for the festival." The man grinned. A fire ant scuttled across his upper teeth. "The peanut festival?" Scott asked in near apoplectic terror.
"Not that one, son," the mayor said.
He clapped his hands and torches erupted around the clearing, revealing a gigantic ant statue looming over the congregation and, behind it, the thing that Scott thought was a normal hill. My God, it wasn't a hill at all. It was an ant hill. Dozens of yards tall, even more wide, a monstrosity nature never should have invented.
"Fire ant festival," the mayor said, though Scott needed no clarification. It was clear what was being celebrated here.
As one, the townspeople rolled their heads back, just like Flossie, and a skittering sound built to such a volume that Scott fell to the ground, covered his ears, and screamed. Trillions of ants burst forth from the townspeople, spilling onto the ground and scuttling up the hill. It was the most horrific sight human eyes had ever seen. More horrific than anything Scott Splinter, the second greatest horror writer of all time, could have thought up.
"Why me?"
Scott whimpered, his eyes wide with demented fear.
"Why'd you invite me here?"
The mayor chuckled. "That voice, Mr. Splinter? Something about your velvety tone sets our feelers all a-twitter. Gets us in the mood, shall we say? Every year we got to go out of the county to find new blood for her."
"Flossie?"
Scott asked, his voice trembling just like his pathetic body. The anthill began to rumble.
"No,"
the mayor said. His eyes gleamed in the torchlight, and there, just behind the irises, Scott could see the man's eyes bulging and squirming like something was crawling behind them. Something antsy. The mayor pointed to the anthill's top.
"Her."
Gigantic ant legs emerged from the peak of the anthill, each the size of a small ice cream truck. The legs flexed like they were pulling something immense out of a too small hole.
"Every festival needs a king," the mayor said. "And as our special guest, well, that's you."
And, Scott stuttered, "and the queen?"
"Oh, son,"
the mayor said, his voice dripping with mock pity.
"We've always had our queen."
Scott's eyes were locked on the six enormous legs.
A skittering sound came from behind him where the mayor was standing, and he heard skin hit the ground. He gulped. Then, with painful slowness, pincers emerged from the anthill's top, followed by feelers, followed by a head, an abdomen, and a thorax. And there, in the moonlight, taller than the treetops, the ant queen of Ashburn threw her head back and screeched. Scott backpedaled. Now, Mr. Splinter, that ain't no way to treat your new bride.
Well, what did you think of my evil story?
It's amazing.
I knew you would like it. Let me get you your reward. Steve? Bop this woman harder than you've ever bopped.
God. Where am I?
You're in my evil bathroom. Steve, take her away.
Huh? Who am I? What's going on?
Well, my dear, you just read the heck out of one of my evil stories, and now I'm keeping you in my dungeon so that you can read more.
But I have no memory. What's going on? Is that an eyeball? Oh, yuck!
Don't worry. There'll be plenty more time for memories in the future. Dungeon memories. This episode was performed by Lauren Fox and Lord Serpent. It was edited by Charles Brock, Michael Morgan, and Lord Serpent. Ashburn was written by Charles Brock and Lord Serpent. It was produced by Stacey Milbourne, Michael Morgan, Charles Brock, and Lord Serpent. Michael Morgan and Lord Serpent were the audio engineers. The music was composed by Charles Brock and Lord Serpent. Tune in next week for the final evil tale of horrific, monstrous terror for this season. Be sure to follow me on Instagram at Lord Serpent's Library and check out my homepage at rss.com/podcasts/Lord Serpent's Library.